are having parents, all they care is about the health of their child, and you're having an administration saying that their child isn't worthy.
Coming up on Carolina Connection, mothers are wondering what rights their children will have under President Trump's executive orders. I'm Maddie Policastro.
And I'm Sarah Ellis. Also this week, a freeze on federal funding could impact the town of Chapel Hill, but the mayor says it's not clear how. The recent cold snap has left local unhoused population in danger. UNC announces a plan to increase enrollment, even though some current students can't get on-campus housing.
You're focused on classes, but at the same time, you have to focus on finding somewhere to live next semester to even continue to keep going to Carolina.
From the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media, this is Carolina Connection. Thank you for joining us. It's been a chaotic month, with Donald Trump signing 36 executive orders in the first 10 days of his presidency. One of them aims to end birthright citizenship for children born to parents who are undocumented or who are in the U.S. on temporary status. Gauri Abhinanda has more on the uncertainty many people are feeling.
Just off US 15501 on a quiet road in Durham is an immigration law firm, a small white building with a blue door, and just upstairs is Yesenia Polanco, owner and managing attorney of Polanco Law. She came to the States when she was 4 years old from El Salvador and has been practicing law for 16 years. In between representing individuals seeking citizenship or providing removal defense, Polanco has often found herself hosting Facebook live streams.
The lighting is everything. This lighting is not cute. We'll do it.
Once she gets her lighting in order, she starts.
Buenas tardes. ¿Cómo estamos todos?
President Trump's executive order would deny birthright citizenship, not only to children born to parents without legal status, but also those in the U.S. temporarily. That would include people on student, tourist, or H-1B visas. The order would affect children born after February 19th of this year. Now, Polanco's afternoons are filled with questions from community members struggling with this uncertainty.
Let's say it's February 19th, 2025, and that this and that Trump's executive order stands. Then the child that's born in a hospital right here at Duke University will be undocumented. They will be undocumented. They would not have, if they're not citizens, then they don't have documents, right? And so are they subject to deportation from day one?
There are more questions than there are answers, largely in part because the executive order rids more than 125 years of legal precedent. UNC law professor Theodore Shaw says the order would undo the 14th Amendment, adopted in 1868, that overturned the Dred Scott Supreme Court decision that safeguarded slavery, barred African Americans from being citizens, and started the Civil War.
All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. They are citizens of the United States in the state wherein they reside. That's the Constitution as it stands now. If people don't like it, then they have the right to try to change it.
But changing it would be unlikely. A federal judge in Washington state blocked Trump's executive order, calling it unconstitutional. Shaw says he doesn't expect different results in the suits brought by the 22 states against the order.
We are a nation of laws, not of men and women. I would expect that the result would be the same.
But if the result is different and the president's order is upheld, Polanco says inaccessibility to the programs like healthcare, education, and federal financial aid would cause economic hardship to families trying to access these resources for their children. Stefania Arteaga of Carolina Migration Network, a Charlotte-based advocacy organization, says it will also have an emotional impact on expecting mothers.
You are having parents in an impossible situation where all they care is about the health of their child. And you're having an administration saying that their child isn't worthy.
While there is fear in the community, Arteaga says the order is not official and there's a long way to go before we see an impact.
The reality is that a lot of people have been here for years. I've been here for 20 plus years of my life. I intend to live in the U.S. I intend to have children in the U.S. And just like me, there's other people around the country that will do the same.
In the meantime, she recommends parents request their children's U.S. passports and secure documentation. In Chapel Hill, I'm Gauri Abhinanda.
In another executive order, made only 7 days after his inauguration, President Trump ordered a freeze on most federal funding. Federal courts have blocked the order for now, after 22 states, including North Carolina, sued the administration. If the White House is eventually able to implement the order, one local leader says it could limit Chapel Hill's public transportation, green initiatives, public libraries, and more. Carolina Connection's W.H. Hayes is joined by Chapel Hill Mayor Jess Anderson.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Mayor Anderson, for being here. Since January 27th, it's been unclear what the exact implications and impacts of the federal funding freeze will be and what that will be like for the people in Chapel Hill. For starters, what do you think will be programs that are being most impacted that people tend to kind of see very frequently?
Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of programs that our residents engage with every day could be impacted if the freeze on funding is back on again, which is a day-to-day mystery to some of us. But our public library that a huge number of our residents are engaging with online and in person every day receives federal funding. Our transit system, our clean energy initiatives, our public housing and affordable housing initiatives. There are just huge and wide-ranging impacts. Our Greenway network that we're trying to build out, we're relying on federal funding for. So there are a huge number of impacts that will that would be seen by a lot of our residents, particularly our under-resourced and marginalized residents, who part of our mission of the town is to really be serving folks in substantive ways that I think would be impacted.
And when we spoke, you mentioned that budget season's coming soon. What is that going to look like for the town of Chapel Hill in light of these orders, in light of any future orders? Will it be harder? Will it be easier? Will it be postponed? What will it look like?
Yeah, we can't postpone our budget. We are mandated at the state level to have a balanced budget by the end of every fiscal year. So we must come up with a budget. I imagine that what I'm hoping is that our budgeting season is just as complicated as it ever is every year. It's always a very a challenging job to balance all the needs in town. And I'm hoping that just continues to be the case, that we go through that hard work. I'm really hoping that it turns out that all of this is kind of just distraction and, doesn't come to pass. But I do think we're all going to have to start thinking about, how do we have some safeguards in place, not knowing what will come in the next few years. And so being thoughtful. But I hope that we're able to continue as we have been, doing the best that we can for the residents here and really coming up with a thoughtful, strategic and budget that meets the needs of people. So I don't know yet, but it always just adds uncertainty, which is really a ripple effect. It's not good for communities. It's harder. It makes our job harder. And the job is already hard enough. I think we want to be able to rely on the federal government to support us in doing the right thing for the people of our towns and cities. And we're not in a place right now where I feel like we have that support and the certainty that we're going to get the things that we need to make things run smoothly.
What would be your message to constituents at this moment in time?
I think my message would really be to hold steady. We're all going to take a breath. We're all going to be working as hard as we can to mitigate impacts if they come to pass. And let's not decide that something terrible has happened yet, because I think that things will be at some point, if the order is put back in place. It was rescinded this week by the administration. So, hopefully that's the way it stays. But given that it has felt a bit chaotic, we don't know what's going to happen. So let's let things go through the courts, let things go through systems that I think will kick in. So I hope that folks are not feeling as anxious and worried as I've heard from folks this week. And I don't want to tell people to not worry about anything. I think that would be disingenuous, but I do think let's take it one step at a time and let's let those systems and safeguards kick in before we cry defeat.
Mayor Jess Anderson, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
UNC Chancellor Lee Roberts says the university enrollment numbers haven't kept up with North Carolina's growing population. Roberts has announced the university will admit an additional 500 students for this next year. However, Carolina already struggles to house all the students who want to live in an on-campus dorm. Mia Khatib reports.
It's that time of year again when colleges decide which high school seniors they'll accept. Last Friday, UNC Chapel Hill released some early decisions at 4 o'clock on the dot. Current first-year Ava Fulmer picked her phone up at just the right time to hear that two of her high school friends got in.
You got into UNC?
No.
She probably wasn't the only Tar Heel getting a call like that, especially now that UNC is pushing forward on its plan to increase enrollment. Chancellor Lee Roberts told the Board of Trustees last week he hopes to bring in 5,000 more students over 10 years.
We're going to jumpstart that by adding 500 students to the incoming class that we're admitting right now. And so that's going to be an important down payment on that enrollment growth.
One problem. UNC already has a shortage of dorm rooms, which has led it to deny on-campus housing to many upperclassmen, one of whom is junior Andreas Ortega. He transferred to UNC this past fall.
We went from like, hopefully we get housing, to like, no, we can't get housing. So it caused a lot of like panic trying to find apartments because, again, Chapel Hill is pretty expensive, so is Carrboro. And it's not like the availability is humongous.
According to UNC Media Relations, the university reserves beds for about 30 transfer students. Others are offered remaining spaces after first years and returning students are housed.
So it kind of like leaves the transfer students kind of like high and dry. You had to find housing, you had to accommodate yourself, you had to get used to the environment of a brand new school, you had to get used to everything being new now.
For returning students, Carolina Housing prioritizes room selection by credit hours. This means seniors pick first, then juniors and sophomores who are grouped together. In Hinton James Residence Hall, Suite 809, Fulmer said she and her friends lost the housing lottery for next year. She's on the wait list for a dorm room while others will be moving off campus.
You're focused on classes, but at the same time, you have to focus on finding somewhere to live next semester to even continue to keep going to Carolina, which just all of like the stress is like accumulating. So I'm just trying to like not think about it during the week and kind of just have it as like a weekend thing, like scouring through, visiting places, finding different things.
UNC Media Relations said 965 returning undergraduate students are on the wait list as of January 28th. Fulmer says she's number 148.
Over-enrolling is filling up the campus more with people, which is great because Carolina is an amazing place to go. But at the same time, it kind of diminishes and takes away opportunities for people that have already loved Carolina here.
UNC Media Relations expects one more dorm to be available next year. Avery Residence Hall is scheduled to reopen after renovations, but they say the total number of beds will fluctuate over the next several years because of construction projects. Roberts told the trustees that expanding enrollment won't be easy, but he said none of the constraints are insurmountable. In Chapel Hill, I'm Mia Khatib.
Recent winter weather brought more than just snow. Freezing temperatures in the last few weeks also caused several organizations to implement programs designed to give homeless people a place to sleep. Melody Cardi talks to community members to learn how weather-focused initiatives are making a difference.
It's not uncommon to see blankets and tents spread out down Franklin Street. With the recent winter weather, unhoused individuals have had a harder time than normal finding comfort. A woman walking down the street with all of her belongings says that she's been unhoused for 4 years. She asked us to withhold her name due to concerns for her security.
I've learned, just being out here, that the best thing you can do is if you can find a wall and hover into that wall and get blankets. I try to bear it through the night.
Just behind the Raising Canes on Franklin Street sits the Community Empowerment Fund's Chapel Hill office. Executive Director Donna Carrington has been assisting the unhoused population for years. The recent cold weather has increased the amount of people seeking overnight shelter.
It's been hard for them to find places to be. Lots of restaurants and things don't want people hanging out in their places without buying things.
This season's cold temperatures have meant all hands on deck for nonprofit organizations. The Community Empowerment Fund has been working with local shelters like the Interfaith Council to survey the problem. The number of people seeking help has grown tremendously.
We've had probably double and triple what we've ever had, which is a good thing because people are coming in. It's also a hard thing in our community because we're seeing newer people, we're seeing people we haven't seen before.
For unhoused people, shelters in the Chapel Hill area offer two different services. As long-term support, the Interfaith Council has winter beds available from November through March. For short-term needs, when it's below freezing, the University Baptist Church is open as an emergency shelter. Holly Motley, University Baptist's Minister of Administration and Communications, helps the church's mission team set up the facility.
This central location is where cots would typically be set up, and in these side rooms is where supplies are, things like food.
When the number of people seeking shelter exceeds University Baptist capacity of 25, there is another facility the Community Empowerment Fund can use. Once that shelter is also full, Carrington says they do their best.
So far, we just have figured it out.
Community Empowerment Fund and the Winter Bed Program have faced countless problems related to funding. But Motley says the work is too important to give up.
And it is a very large group of committed, dedicated, skilled people that allow this shelter and other shelters to happen in this community. They're just a group of really amazing, kind-hearted people.
On Franklin Street, there's chatter about whether it will be cold enough for the emergency shelters to open. The unhoused woman carrying her belongings says her fingers are crossed.
Whether we have the chance to say it to them, to their faces or not, we really, really, really do need them and really, really, really do appreciate them.
Even as the forecast predicts warmer weather, the mission of local nonprofit organizations won't change. The goal remains to help those in need. In Chapel Hill, this is Melody Carty.
You're listening to Carolina Connection. I'm Sarah Ellis.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. Dozens of colorful quilts adorned the walls of the Hargraves Community Center last weekend. Local quilter David Lyles and his students showcased their quilts and community. Lily Kane has more.
For Carborough resident David Lyles, quilting is more than a hobby. It's a way of life.
I quilt every day of my life. Every day of my life, I quilt.
It's a love that started at an early age.
So my mom and grandma and all them sewed, made clothes and stuff. And that's how I got my mom's scraps off the floor and started sewing them together. And I didn't know I was quilting until now.
Lyles says for him, quilting is a way to put a smile on people's faces. Last weekend at the Hargraves Community Center in Chapel Hill, he was able to do just that. Lyles wandered through row after row of colorful quilts, telling the story behind each one.
This quilt here, what it reminds you of is like a beehive. And it's got a beautiful print around the edges that kind of remind you of maybe the forest or something like that.
The quilts came in all shapes and sizes. Some were black and white, others were rainbow and glittery. They featured cats, Christmas trees, baskets, and beaded tassels. Lyles had even turned two of them into dresses that hung on mannequins. Every quilt came from Lyles and the students he teaches.
The quilts that's being showed is people that first time making a quilt.
2 years ago, Lyles began leading a weekly quilt circle. The group is called Sewing a Story. They meet every Thursday from 10 to 1 for 3 hours of quilting and community.
It's so much fun. It doesn't really feel like a quilting class totally because we have music and the people in the class are so friendly.
That's Pat Holman, one of Lyle's quilting students. She had never made a quilt before she joined the group 2 years ago. But after dropping into one of the classes, she quickly became a regular.
once you come, you just don't want to leave. And they said, well, time up. And we're like, can we have five more minutes?
She's made 7 quilts since joining the class. She says she gave most of them away to children, including her grandson. Josette Mack, another member of the circle, was already a seasoned quilter when she joined. She says she's made more than 85 quilts in her lifetime.
For me, it means joy. Soothes my nerves, too.
For Lyles, the group is a way to build community. He hopes that when people see the quilts, they think one thing.
I'm home. I'm home now, and I'm in peace.
In Chapel Hill, I'm Lily Kane.
Is this winter season here to stay? To help us find out, on Groundhog Day, is local groundhog Snurd. February 2nd, Snurd will make his prediction after months of research. Regan Rimes consults.
Pacing through the leaves of Anderson Park in Carrboro, I meet up with the Claws Incorporated founders. Their volunteer animal sanctuary is home to over 100 rescued animals. One of those animals is Snurd the groundhog, who will share his weather forecast predictions tomorrow at the Garner Groundhog Day celebration. Claws Executive Director Kendra Mamone expresses her excitement for their furry weatherman's upcoming event.
It's at White Deer Park, which is an absolutely gorgeous park. There's so much to do there. There's creeks, there's ponds, and they have a lot of events for people of all ages, actually.
Mr. Snurd, however, isn't your ordinary groundhog. According to online Groundhog Day tracking, Snurd's accuracy rate of roughly 85% beats out Punxsutawney Phil.
And Snurd doesn't do Groundhog Day like other groundhogs. He's not an old-fashioned groundhog who looks for a shadow because that's all silly. So he spends this week talking to Mother Nature, going to the Farmer's Almanac, going to NOAA, all those places, and then decides.
Meeting this special groundhog, I wondered, where does a name like Snurd come from? Claws treasurer Vincent Mamone jumps in to give us the backstory.
I said, please, 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 I'll never name another animal. Please let me name this one Snurd. And she went with it. Amazing. So now we always have two groundhogs, and one is Mortimer and one is Snurd. They just flip back and forth.
Mortimer Snurd is a dummy of American ventriloquist and radio show host Edgar Bergen. His character and Snurd the groundhog are alike in their playful personalities. During my chat with Kendra and Vincent, Snurd even came out of his cage to say hello and get a bite to eat.
Hey, bubby.
Hey, buddy.
Snurd's
my boy. There's my boy.
Bananas are Snurd's go-to snack. He looks forward to these treats at wildlife education events. Kendra Mamone encourages animal lovers to learn more about the facts and misconceptions surrounding wildlife.
My big thing is everybody learned everything they know about wildlife from Bugs Bunny, and that's entertainment, not education. There's so many myths, like the myth that skunks, raccoons, and foxes are nocturnal. None of them are. Not one of those animals is nocturnal.
One of Claus's volunteers, Christine Kelson, says she's an introvert, but that goes away when she educates event-goers on wildlife. To her, she's privileged to have that opportunity.
We do several different types of shows. Like, we do a lot of festivals. What we're doing in Garner on Groundhog Day will be like those. Mostly it includes birds because we can leash those to our glove, so it's a little safer. If we're going to use mammals, we're typically inside. So we go into schools, libraries, you name it, wherever they call us.
Snurd scurried back in his cage to head home. Want to meet Snurd and learn more about Claws? Head to the Garner Groundhog Day celebration tomorrow at White Deer Park from 1 to 3:15 p.m. In Chapel Hill, I'm Reagan Rimes.
Finally, the UNC men's basketball team is looking to upset its number 2 ranked rival, Duke, in Durham tonight at 6:30. You can hear the game right here on 97.9 The Hill. Carolina Connections' Andy Zhao asks students what their plans for the night are.
My name is Dakota Bagson. I'm a freshman, and this Saturday, either me and my suites are going to watch it in our dorm, or we're going to go somewhere on Franklin.
My name is William Malone. I'm a junior, class of 26, and I'm playing a guitar at a gig on Saturday.
For the game?
For the game.
Where?
Invite only. I can DM you after.
My name is Cho Grady, and I'm a sophomore, and this week I'm going to watch the UNC versus Duke game, and I'm throwing an after party.
So what do you want the after party to be like?
I need
like
everyone.
Project
there.
X.
Like Project X. Yeah, it need to be like Project X. Like everybody need to come out.
David Selva, man, sophomore. Screw a devil, give him hell. They're telling me I can't cuss. You feel me? I'ma get lit. And anywho.
My name is Nicholas XU, and I'm a freshman. Tomorrow, I'm probably just gonna be studying all day. I'm kind of a nerd, I'm sorry.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Carolina Connection, a production of the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. Our technical director this week is Kevin Paris. I'm Sarah Ellis.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. If you like what you heard, there's plenty more from reporters past and present on our website at carolinaconnection.org and on Instagram, Facebook, and now on Blue Sky.
And now back to weekend programming on 97.9 The Hill.